You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 68, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. So before we get started with our review this week, I do have some quick shout-outs to do, and that's because we've had not one, not two, but three new people join the Facebook group in this past week, and I do want to give a shout-out to each and every one of you. First is Dustin. Hello, Dustin. It's good to have you aboard. Second, of course, is Mr. Walt Grogan, and Walt is another podcaster. He does a podcast called the Chicago Geocachers Podcast. Big DC fanboy, particularly big fan of Captain Marvel. Now, Walt, in addition to joining our Facebook group, also contributed to the show a new logo, a new banner for the Facebook page, but it has also been used now, the actual download site for the Comics Podcast Network. So, it's a multi-use sort of logo, and it's gorgeous. So I just love it. So thanks very much, Walt. And Walt has asked for a sketch, which I am currently kind of doing some very basic sort of layouts for right now. And so that will be along, eventually. You know, it's hard to get back into drawing sometimes when you haven't done it for a long time. So I've been doing little structure sketches and so forth of what I want to do. All right, and third, but certainly not least, Manuel. So hello, Manuel. And Manuel had a question for us. He wanted to know whether or not we'd be doing more recent Thor issues as the show progresses. And my answer to him on Facebook as well as here is, yeah, we're going to be doing something. I am actually looking at doing Thor Blood Oath. And that will probably be the next of the modern Thor things that we'll be doing. And I've been reading it and just kind of trying to figure out what to say about it. Because it's a really cool and really interesting series. Now, this episode, again, I'm sorry, it's another short show. And I don't know how short because it's a long issue. But it is because of the trying to get ahead because of vacation and so forth. So this week, we're going to be covering not a Thor issue, but we're going to be covering What If number 10 from 1978. So let's just go ahead and move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And What If number 10 was published in August of 1978, retailed for 60 cents. The cover art is by John Buscema. Looks like Buscema inking himself here on the cover. Very silly cover. We'll talk about that in a second because I'm going to do the credits first. The story was written by science fiction writer Don Glut, which is kind of interesting. He doesn't write all that many comics even back during this period. The artist was Rick Hoberg, inked by Dave Hunt. Carl Gafford was the colorist. The letterer was Carol Lay, who is in her own right a cartoonist. The editor was Roy Thomas, and the editor-in-chief was Jim Shooter. And the story for this issue is, what if Jane Foster had found the Hammer of Thor? And the cover art is an homage to Journey into Mystery number 83, the first appearance of Thor. And remember, on the cover of that, which was by Jack Kirby, of course, we had Thor kind of standing on the street, which, of course, Thor's always standing in the street. So they have him standing in the street in the middle of a city, and there's these orange, rocky, alien dudes dropping down from their spaceship and whirling his hammer around. In this case, a very female-looking Thor. And up in the corner of the cover, there's an image of Thor, as we know him, saying, "By the sacred beard of Odin!" And the female Thor saying, "Don't worry your golden locks about me, Thunder God!
Thordis can take care of herself.
And the cover board promises us the wildest, most wondrous what-if yet. And wait till you lay eyes on our startling shock ending. And we open up to the splash page where we see an image of the Watcher. And the Watcher is kind of, if you're not familiar with the character, came from the Fantastic Four series. And there's this race of people called the Watchers who kind of, well, that's what they do. They're like cosmic voyeurs and they just kind of watch everything and they're pledged not to interfere, but occasionally they do. The Watcher character in this case was kind of the host of the What If series. He was the one who kind of narrated all of these stories about alternate realities and so forth, because that's really what all these stories are. And we start out with a beautiful splash page here, Thor, and he's flying apparently towards Earth across the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard. You've got Asgard, the Golden City, kind of glowing in the background, and the Watcher's narrating.
I am the Watcher, and often I have peered into fabled Asgard, home to the legendary Norse gods, and observed the heroics of Thor, the hammer-wielding thunder god. But even a Watcher can entertain thoughts of fancy. Therefore, I proposed the question, what if Jane Foster had found the hammer of Thor?
And we then turn to a double-page spread here, and it's very, very well drawn. Essentially, what this is a retelling, really all in like a double-page spread, if you can believe it, a retelling of the origin of Thor as told in Journey into Mystery number 83. So we have, you know, the image of Don Blake hiking in the mountains of Norway, stumbles into a cave being chased by these orange alien dudes, finds a magic cane, bangs it on the ground, he becomes Thor. And that is essentially what happens on this double page spread. But then we have the Watcher thinking, well, you know, maybe it on another Earth, this might have happened a little bit differently, and kind of waves his hand, and he shows an image of the Earth. And in this Earth, the variable here is that Don Blake did not go to Norway alone. And he has with him his nurse, Jane Foster. And the two of them are chatting here, and she says,
"Do you regret that I came along, Doctor?"
"Well, if you'd stayed at the office in New York City, Jane, we wouldn't have been burdened in looking after me." And he's thinking to himself, "I can't tell her how thrilling it is just to be near her like this alone."
"There you go again, Dr. Blake, feeling sorry for yourself."
"Let's be realistic. It's not easy for me to hike through these mountains."
"And it's not easy for me to always hear you put yourself down like that."
And she's thinking,
"Maybe he's using his lameness as an excuse so he doesn't have to admit how he feels towards me. Oh, Don, isn't there something you'd like to tell me?"
And he's thinking to himself, "If only I could tell her how much I love her. But a woman so beautiful could never love a cripple." "Yes, Jane, let's take in some scenery." Like they're not already doing that.
And the two of them are wandering by this rushing river and these very Canadian-looking mountains. And Don Blake is thinking to himself,
"If I told Jane my true feelings for her, she'd only quit working for me, and I'd never see her again. And if she didn't leave me, it would only be out of pity, something I couldn't bear."
And she's thinking to herself,
"Oh, why can't I make him understand that I don't care he's lame? Why can't he show some gumption?" And
their thoughts are interrupted by the alien spacecraft landing. And Don Blake is like,
"Jane, do you see what I see?"
I'm afraid I do. "What are they, Don? Where are they from?"
And he says, "They're spacecraft of some kind. From where? I just don't know. One thing I do know, we'd best keep out of sight until we learn what this is all about."
And they're hiding behind some rocks. And like just like in Journey into Mystery 83, the spaceships land. And the stone men come wandering out. And they're bragging about how powerful they are.
"This atmosphere is so different from our own planets. This is to our advantage. On Saturn, we are mighty beings. But here in this oxygen atmosphere, our strength is even greater."
And then they're spotted by one of the aliens.
"Whoa, two Earthlings, and they have seen us. They must die."
Don Blake is like, "Jane, if they catch us, they'll kill us."
"After them. Do not let them escape."
And they're running along the trail. And just like in the original comic, Don Blake trips, showing he's just as clumsy in this alternate universe as he was in the Marvel universe. And he drops his cane, goes falling over the cliff. And he's like,
"Oh, I tripped. My cane. I'm helpless without my cane."
Jane Foster, being the intrepid well, she's a lot more intrepid here than she was in the original. She's like, those stone men are pretty slow. I should be able to get your cane. And she goes to try to climb down the cliff to grab the cane. But instead, she steps on some loose rocks and ends up sliding down into this little valley here. Don Blake is like, are you all right, Jane? And she's at the bottom, and she seems to be okay.
Says, I'm just a little scraped, but quickly, hide behind those rocks. As for me, there are some caves down here.
And she's thinking that, you know, she hopes that they're able to get out of there before the aliens can catch them. And, of course, she goes stupidly wandering into this cave and is wandering in, and she's worried about what's going to happen and worried about being discovered. And she's looking for another exit out of this cave. And just like in the original comic, she does. She finds an exit, but it's blocked by a giant boulder and realizes that she'll never be able to move it. And she is just about to faint because she's feeling so helpless. But she leans up against this stone door. And it goes swinging open, and she reckons she must have leaned up against some kind of hidden lever. And she's wondering if this is a way out. But instead, it's just a small chamber, and there's nothing in there but a little stone platform and a gnarled piece of wood. And again, you know, this is just following the story of Journey into Mystery 83. And she picks it up, and she's thinking, it almost looks like a primitive walking stick.
That's ironic. I fell down the slope because I was going after Don's cane. And now, when it may be too late, I find something I could use as a cane. Well, maybe Jane Foster can use it.
For what? I don't want to know. Anyway, she decides she's going to try to use it as a lever. And you remember, Don Blake tried to do the same thing in Journey into Mystery. And that doesn't work because, you know, it just isn't big enough. And she gets angry like he did and whacks it against the boulder. And just like what happened to Don Blake, she begins to change. And she is surrounded by this Kirby crackle. And she finds herself changing shape, getting taller and stronger. And even the dialogue kind of echoes what was in the original issue. And we see on the next page that she has changed into Thor-ish. she's holding the hammer in her hand, and she's wearing the Thor costume with the helmet, and she's got gun shell covers for her boobs, and she's like,
no, I'm not dreaming. The stick has changed into some strange kind of hammer, and somehow I've also been transformed. But into who or what? Good grief, my hair has turned blonde, or more like spun gold. And my clothes have been replaced by this costume that's like something out of an earlier age. But this is impossible. But wait, there seems to be some writing inscribed on the hammer.
And we see the familiar inscription. Whosoever holds this hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. And I have a big problem with this. We'll talk about this after.
I've heard of Thor. He was the thunder god of Norse mythology.
She reckons that obviously since she has Thor's power now, she's really not Jane Foster anymore, so she should call herself something else. And just happens to remember that back in nursing school, there was a Norwegian girl named Thordis. And so she decides to call herself Thordis. And then she decides to see if she really does now have all of Thor's powers. And she thinks to herself that Thor could control thunder and storms, and that his strength was equal to that of Hercules. Some might say stronger. And just like Don Blake did, she goes to move the boulder, and she is able to easily lift it. And she says out loud, Hercules, Hercules, and all you other strong men, eat your hearts out. And she decides to leave the cavern to go find Don Blake. Meanwhile, Don Blake is still kind of up on this trail on the mountain, and the stone men are getting closer to him. It's like, Earthling fool, he thought he could escape us. There is no escape for anyone who has discovered our presence. Then let us slay him quickly, for our main invasion force is about to land. And then we shall seek out and destroy the female. And Don Blake is thinking to himself, if I hadn't been lame, these monsters would never have caught up to me. My lameness has doomed us both. They take Don Blake and they hurl him off the cliff, and it looks like he's going to die. The alien's like, bah, I never suspected Earthlings to be this weak. And he's thinking as he's falling, there's nothing on Earth that can save me but my darling Jane. If there were only someone who could save her from these. And he is rescued by Thordis, who has flown up and grabbed him and says,
you're safe, Dr. Blake.
But who?
Call me Thordis, if I can call you Don. And she's thinking, it's a good thing my hunch proved right, that I can fly by throwing my hammer and catching onto its unbreakable thong.
Something tells me that thong didn't really mean the same thing in 1978 than it does now. So Thor to send her unbreakable thong. That's going in the show notes, you know. And Adam Blake is, you know, she puts him down, and he's saying, Thordis, but you know my name. I don't understand. Wait, the woman I love is down by those caves. So she's like,
don't worry about Jane. Right now, she's in the safest place on Earth.
And she's thinking,
he finally admits it, but to someone else.
And she goes and wades into the stone man, just like Thor did in the original, and manages to scare them all away, just like in Journey into Mystery. And then she changes back into Jane Foster and goes and gets Don. And, you know, you have the NATO troops are arriving like they did in the original. And Don Blake is saying, oh, Jane, thank God you're all right. If not for that mysterious Thordis, we'd both be dead. And Jane's thinking,
if not for Thordis, I'd never have heard you say that you love me. But now I wish you'd tell it to my face. Let's go, Don. I have a stick you could use as a temporary cane.
Now, what I don't understand is why he didn't change into Thor, but I guess he wouldn't think to bang it on the ground. But don't you bang a cane on the ground when you're just walking with it? See, I don't know. Anyway, so the army guys are there. Says, look, those aliens that our jets were fighting are leaving the Earth. But why? What could have driven them off? There's nobody around, except for that lame passerby and his lame girlfriend. Neither of them could be Earth's secret weapon. So that's essentially the origin of Thordis. And as the next few pages, we actually have little bits of retellings of some of the early Thor stories, except with Thordis in the lead role. For example, we have a retelling of her first appearance with Loki. As you remember, we have Loki who was trapped in Asgard, and he causes Heimdall to shed a tear, which sets him free out of this tree that he's been trapped in. And then Loki goes and sets off after Thor on Earth. And, you know, we have the same thing happen here, except that instead of the real Thor, of course, it's Jane Thor. And we have the same scene where he causes the people to turn all negative and they're coated in antimatter particles or whatever the hell they were supposed to be covered in. And we have Thor... And, of course, the main difference here is that we have Don Blake there, and he's saying, I feel so helpless. As a doctor, I should do something, but what's happening is beyond medical science. And if I didn't know better, I'd think this was something supernatural. But Jane? And Jane is ducked away, and... Now, this is really, really insulting. She slips into an alleyway, and she pulls a hairbrush out of her purse, and apparently she's taken this cane... the staff that she found in the cave, and she's had it shaped into a hairbrush and bangs it on the wall to become Thordis, goddess of thunder. And Loki, as he was in the original story, is disguised in a suit in the audience, and people are watching these people be all negative and weird. And he's thinking, by Odin's beard, though that attire is the thunder god's, that shapely beauty is not Thor. And she solves the problem in much the same way that Thor did originally by spinning his hammer around and emitting antimatter particles. And apparently in this universe, too, antimatter doesn't destroy the entire world. But instead, she uses it to free the people. And just like in the original comic, Loki then reveals himself as the evil Loki and challenges Thordis to battle. And Thordis is thinking,
according to mythology, Loki is capable of any evil, but I can't back down from his challenge.
And he lures her away from the people, and he's saying, my plan is working perfectly. Being superhuman like myself, Thordis cannot be conquered by magic alone. But there are other ways, such as maneuvering her so that the sun's rays reflect off of her hammer and into her lovely eyes each time the hammer passes in front of her. Now, you remember, this is exactly the same trick that Loki used against Thor back in that Journey into Mystery issue. And they then land in Central Park, and remember how in the original series, Loki summoned up an image of Thor, and Thor handed his hammer to that image of Thor, thus giving control of Mjolnir to Loki. But in this case, the trick doesn't quite work. And, you know, she's tempted to give it to Thor, but she gets snapped out of it. And,
but Master, the hammer belongs to him, and yet, oh my God!
And she says,
no way, Loki! The hammer's mine, and I'm king!
keeping it. And she smacks him a good one, punches him down with a blaff, and then flies with Loki to the top of the Empire State Building. And then he's like, "Why have you brought me up here? Why have you tied me to your hammer?" And she says, "Can't you guess, Loki? I'm getting rid of you before you can use your magic again." And she hurls him to Asgard, just like Thor did in the original issue. Loki lands in Asgard, and the hammer returns to her. Now, we have a scattering here of characters that we know. We're meeting them a lot earlier in the run, I guess, in this parallel Earth than we did in our Earth. And we see the Warriors 3 are there, and Baldur, and some other sort of generic Viking-looking people. Baldur says, "Behold, 'tis Loki, returned to Asgard by enchanted Mjolnir." "The noble Thor hath returned," says Volstagg. And Loki's like, "You dare lay hands on a son of Odin?" Fandral's there, "You forget, evil one. 'Twas Odin himself who decreed thou must stay imprisoned."
"Ere I forget that I do not seek battle this day. I demand audience with my beloved stepfather."
And they're like, "Well, we can't stop him from that. I mean, everybody has the right to talk to Odin." And Fandral's like, "But be warned, any trickery and thou shalt taste Fandral's blade."
"Aye, and the mace of Hogan the Grim."
And Loki is all sneering-like as a fool. "For once, the simple truth and not my spells shall suffice to make Loki the favored and only son of Odin." Then shift scenes to Odin's throne room, and Odin's like,
"Hold! How be thou free of thine imprisonment, stepson? And now darest thou approach the presence?"
"I am free, my liege, because the terms of my release have been fulfilled. And with thy leave, I beg to convey some most joyous news."
"Then with hopes that thou hast repented, I shall hear you."
"I bear great tidings of thy true son, my liege. The power of Thor is now known on Midgard."
"What sayest thou? Then hath the true flesh of my flesh at last learned his lesson in humility? I warn thee, Loki, if this be one of thine famed tricks. Nay, for even now I sense the Thunder God's power. Indeed hath my blood son returned to Midgard. And not even Loki's power could so deceive the perception of Odin."
And Loki then suggests that Odin bring Thor back to Asgard. And Odin's like, "Hey, that's a really good idea." And Fandral and Hogan are not so sure about this. But anyway, we then cut to Earth and we see Jane Foster being awakened from a deep sleep. And she's thinking to herself, "What a strange dream of some never-never land of magic and heroic gods. And that voice, as if trying to call me to that fabulous place." And I think they kind of forgot about this hairbrush thing because it shows her banging the staff on the it's kind of hard to tell, but it looks like she's banging a staff on the ground and not a hairbrush. She changes into Thordis, and she is kind of wondering where this summoning voice is coming from and decides to let the hammer zero in on it. And sooner rather than later, she ends up on the Rainbow Bridge and is approaching the city of Asgard. And she's flabbergasted by this whole experience.
"Good Lord, I'm being led along some sort of rainbow bridge to a gleaming city right out of Bullfinch's mythology. That has finally happened. Thordis is being called to Asgard, the home of the gods."
And she's walking through the streets and all these people are staring at her like, "Who the hell's that?" And they can't believe what they're seeing because they think that it's Thor, but it's not Thor because they're kind of dumb. They haven't figured out what's going on here. And Thordis goes waltzing into Odin's throne room. And Odin is standing in front of this giant sculpture shaped like an owl, which I don't remember ever seeing before. But anyway, Sif is standing by Odin's side. And
"Is it Thor, my liege? He who bounced me on his knee when I was but a child?"
"The garb be the same, Lady Sif. Yet his gait appears strangely amiss."
And she approaches Odin and he realizes that it's not Thor. And she's like,
"You are obviously the king of these gods. You must be Odin. Then it was you who summoned me in my sleep and brought me to Asgard."
"I summoned my son, not some Valkyrie in Thor's raiment. I warn thee, woman, the presence be in no humor for jesting. Nay, in thy hand is enchanted Mjolnir. Yet none save Thor himself may hold the mystic mallet."
And he's really getting angry here, and unfortunately, he looks a lot like Santa Claus here. He decides to, he's so angry that all of Asgard is shaking like an earthquake, and everyone outside is like, "Could this be Ragnarok?" Yeah, right. He's like,
Ordinarily, it would be Loki I would blame for such base blasphemy. Ho, ho, ho. But in truth, what has befallen Thor is beyond his evil power. Merry Christmas. The real felon be fate itself. Ho, ho, ho. In ages past, the favored son of Odin proved to be sorely lacking in humility. Thus I did strip the thunder god of his power, his godly identity, and his enchanted hammer. Ho, ho, ho. Banished to Midgard in the mortal guise of mortal Blake, he would learn humility. Ere he finding the disguised Mjolnir in the earthly cave wherein I did place it.
Yes, this is very, very wordy.
And yet by some quirk of fate, thou woman, didst come upon it instead.
So he reckons that Thor must still be remaining on Earth, and being here in Asgard, there's very little he can do. And he then says,
thus doth Odin have but one son, Loki.
But he just got done saying that Thor was still alive. He's just on Earth. Ugh. And so Thordis is like,
but Odin, your highness, what about me?
And all the warriors three and Baldur gathered around her. Volstagg is totally hitting on her here, because apparently he's single in this alternate reality, or else he's just a big philanderer.
'Twould be the suggestion of valiant Volstagg that yon beauty remain in Asgard, riding at my side, as I single-handedly fight off the myriad threats to the realm eternal.
And Fandral is even more of a creep, is like, listen not to that blustering hover-stuffed oaf, m'lady. True, Asgard would glitter yet more with thy golden beauty, but 'twill be at the side of the dashing Fandral. Together we shall find some secluded spot, and he whispers into her ear, and that pisses her off, and she does like a judo flip and throws Fandral over her shoulder, knocks over Hogun with him, and he's like,
sorry to disappoint you, Vandal, or whatever you call yourself, but no rich man's imitation of Errol Flynn is going to pick me up, even if he is a god.
And we go back to Santa Claus, I mean Odin.
Ho, 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 behold, Lady Sif, her power is equal to the mighty Thor. Merry Christmas, yet still must this ungodly conflict cease. Ho, ho, ho.
And Sif asks what he's going to do, and he banishes Thordis to Earth. And she's being kind of zapped to Earth by one of Odin's spells, and she's thinking to herself,
oh my lord, after that I'm glad to return to Earth.
We then cut to Sif, and she's thinking to herself,
it has long been said that when I reached womanhood, that when Thor did eventually return to the realm eternal, that might someday the thunder god and Sif wed. But my long wait hath been for naught, and
Odin's looking really upset here. And she says,
almighty Odin, I know the grief thou bearest, for my own loss must surely be as grave as thine.
Thy words have the power to soothe Lady Sif, yet for now, the presence would rather do battle with his infinite misery alone.
And Loki is hiding behind the curtains like he often does, and he's gloating here.
Yet Odin's solitude shall not be for long, for when his divine tears have dried in his bristling whiskers, then will his son Loki be ever at his side.
And we then come back to Earth, and we have we're playing out some of Thor's early adventures, kind of a panel apiece. So in the first panel, we have her fighting against the radioactive man, as we did back in Journey into Mystery. We have her fighting against the Lava Man, remember back from Journey into Mystery 97. And we have her even going against the Cobra and Mr. Hyde. At the bottom of the page, we see the Avengers and how Thordis has joined the Avengers. And we have the Wasp here, and she's saying,
you know, giant man, with our most powerful member being a woman, your wonderful Wasp doesn't feel so tiny anymore. Giant man? Giant man? Mr. High Pockets, what are you gawking at?
Did you say something, honey?
As all the Avengers, the male Avengers, are lusting after Thordis. And the next page, we see that Thordis is fighting the Tomorrow Man and his giant robot. You remember that? I think that was Journey into Mystery 86. Now, they're kind of going back and forth among the stories, so apparently on this alternate Earth, they didn't quite happen as they did. And we see that during this battle, Odin is watching using his cosmic voyeuroscope, and he doesn't look like Santa Claus, so I don't have to do a Santa voice for him now. He's like,
thou dost see, Lady Sif. Now this Thor dis valiantly vanquishes the Tomorrow Man's evil automaton. Truly she doth wield the power of Thor. 'Tis because of her godly prowess that I am deeply troubled. For 'tis time thy sovereign doth acquire life renewed by sleeping the legendary Odin sleep. If only Thor's power could guard the unprotected realm whilst I slumber. But not even Odin shall summon the banished Thordis again to these hallowed halls.
And Loki is spying on them, as always, using his cosmic voyeurscope. So we've just got voyeurs all around here. And he's like,
"So though the threat to Asgard be severe, great also is stubborn Odin's pride. Then, since Thordis shall not interfere, Loki shall wait, as Father Odin sinks deeply into his Odin sleep, and the kingdom as its most vulnerable. Ha, but what is this? The Lady Sif, striding in rapid step towards the Rainbow Bridge. Hath the goddess lost courage to flee Asgard ere danger befalls it?"
And we don't see what happens next because we cut to Earth and Don Blake, who is walking along a windswept beach and thinking how sorry he is that he and Jane have drifted so far apart it may be too late for them. And he's wondering about how she seems to go missing without explanation and is wondering if she's even tired of working for Dr. Blake. And of course, you know, like Lois Lane, he's just too stupid to figure out that she has an alternate identity, even though all the clues are there. So Dr. Blake is as much an idiot in this universe as he was in the original. But he's wandering around the beach, and he suddenly sees this black-haired woman drowning out in the ocean. And she's like, "Help me, please, someone help." And he's like, "Good God, it's a girl, and it looks like she can't swim. I can't move too fast with this bad leg, but I've got to try." And he swims out to her to rescue her. And the whole time he's swimming out, he's complaining about how much his leg hurts, blah, 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 blah. And she grabs onto him, and then realizing that she's not actually drowning, he's like, "What?" And she's like, "I knew thou wouldst not leave me to perish, my love. Thou didst endure thy pain so that I would not be swallowed by the sea, and for that thou shalt be rewarded. With but a caress of my hand, the pain shall flee thy limb, and thou will be lame no more." Well, I hate to break it to you, but Don Blake is still pretty lame. Anyway, he's like, "I can feel it. I'm not lame anymore." And as the two of them head their way towards the beach, this woman changes her clothing and is no longer in a pink bikini, but she is dressed as the Lady Sif.
"How did you... What? You're changing. Please, you've got to tell me what's going on. First, by some miraculous touch, you heal me. Then you suddenly transform into..." And she introduces herself.
"I am Sif, Don Blake, a goddess like Thordis, but deeply in love with thee. You're certainly the most beautiful woman I've ever encountered, but why would a goddess be in love with me?"
And she's like, "I beg thee, Don, ask no more, but take me in thine arms." And she's thinking that she's forbidden to reveal that he possesses the soul of Thor, because he doesn't have any clue at this point. And we then shift scenes, and Don Blake and Sif are walking through the streets of New York City. And, you know, he looks normal in his blue suit and all that, but she's wearing this white and magenta armor that she wore in a lot of the early appearances. And Don Blake is saying, "They're all staring, Sif. I guess they don't see a goddess this close every day." And she's like, "Well, maybe they're looking at you, Donald, walking so straight and godlike beneath Midgard's sun." And all of a sudden they are set upon by the evil Loki. And he is after Don Blake. And she's like,
"Loki,
stand thee back, beloved. The sword of Sif shall strike for thee."
And he's like, "Loki, the Prince of Evil you told me about?"
"Aye, here to strike with his enchanted Norn staff and destroy my half-brothers. Some force prevents me from speaking it."
"As Sif shall prevent any harm from befalling my beloved."
"Not whilst the magic of the Norn wood can easily vanquish even a goddess like thee."
And he smacks Sif back with his staff, and we see then Don Blake leaping into action, and he has his suit jacket off, and he's wrapping it around Loki's face.
"I may not be an Asgardian immortal, Loki, but I'm not a coward either, and nobody, not even a god with a magic staff, strikes the woman I love."
And he wraps his arm around Loki's throat, and Loki drops his staff in the panic and goes to fall down. He manages to recover, and he lifts Don Blake over his head and is going to throw him against the wall. And he's like,
"Thou art a fool, mortal, to think that Loki could be so crudely entrapped by thy rap. Now I shall do what I have come to do, though my vengeance would be infinitesimally more profound, could I but blurt out to you the reason I seek thy death."
So Loki goes to whap Dr. Blake against the wall, but he's knocked away from him by the hammer of Thordis, and...
"You'll destroy no one, Horn Helmet."
He's like, "What? Mjolnir is striking me for my human victim."
"Not only that, Loki, but also zooming right back to its mistress like an Asgardian boomerang."
"Thordis, I should have expected thine interference."
And then she starts summoning thunderbolts to zapped Loki, but he's like, it has a magical force field, so they don't quite get through, and realizes that he can't win this fight, so he retreats and decides to plan to defeat Odin another way. And so we find out that in the battle, Sif has been badly injured, and they've got to get her to a hospital fast. Thordis is thinking,
ironic, because of his lameness, Don was afraid to love Jane Foster, and now that he's cured, he seems to have found someone else,
because that's more important than getting an injured woman to the hospital.
Let me take her to the hospital, doctor.
And we cut to the scene across town, and have Don Blake operating on Sif, and Thordis in full costume is his nurse. He's like,
I was afraid I couldn't perform the operation without my regular nurse, Thordis, but your skills equal Miss Foster's. Yes, Sif should be all right, thank God.
And we cut to a scene sometime later where Sif is waking up from her surgery, and Blake is saying,
Operation was a complete success, honey, but now you'll have to rest for a bit.
Now, isn't there some sort of an ethical thing that doctors have to adhere to, that they don't operate on their loved ones? I think I remember something about this, but and I guess in this alternate universe, that doesn't exist. And Sif is saying,
and rest I shall, beloved, but 'twas thee who pit thy mortal prowess against the magic of Loki. It was thy hand which healed me.
Just as you healed me, remember?
And up in Asgard, Loki is spying down. He's like,
let them enjoy their few moments of sentimental respite, for ere the Allfather wakens, Thor's mortal shell shall perish, never to rise again.
But Loki is distracted by some goings-on in Asgard, and he notices that evil clouds are settling over the realm, these evil purple clouds, and he's like,
evil clouds do settle over the realm eternal. Then today is the dreaded day has finally come upon us.
And the clouds also settle over Earth. And, you know, this is a retelling of an issue that we haven't covered yet, though we're going to be covering it fairly soon. This is Thor 154 through 157, and the story of the Mangog. So we have the evil Mangog. Basically, while Odin is in the Odin sleep, he's coming to draw the Odin sword and destroy all of the nine worlds. And so basically that's what's going on here. And, you know, in the original, Thor went up and rescued everyone. And, you know, of course, in this, we really don't have Thor. And so we have Thordis, and she's going to Asgard. She's going to help the people fight the Mangog. And Sif is with her, and Don Blake is insisting on coming along. He's like,
I want to go with you to Asgard, Thordis, to fight at Sif's side, or to die with her.
And so Thordis, for some reason, is like, okay, yeah, we're going to Asgard now. And they do that, and they're fighting against Mangog, and they're noticing that the streets are all deserted and so forth. And things are going pretty much as they do in the original comic, which, like I said, we haven't really covered yet. They give Don Blake an enchanted sword and figure that he'll need it. And he's thinking to himself,
magic swords, Norse gods. I should be stunned by all this, but for some reason I'm not.
And Thordis is all about, well, you can worry about this later. And people are kind of coming out of the palace. And
Mangog seeketh the Odin sword. Loki doth not to stop him.
And they are in the palace and guarding the Odin sword as the Mangog breaks into the chamber where the Odin sword is being kept. And the Mangog breaks through and he's like,
the Odin sword, I see it at last. It's the moment of truth.
And Sif is like, and we shall battle as one. And Thordis and Sif are battling, and he's like,
away, puny ones. Canst thou hope to stop the power of a billion billion beings?
And he's easily knocking them all aside.
And now the revenge supreme. With but one last blow, I crush thee all.
And he whaps aside Sif, and he begins to draw the Odin sword, signaling the beginning of Ragnarok. But as he's doing that, Thordis decides, well, you know, if we can't stop this monster, then maybe someone else can. I've got to create a storm so titanic that it wakes up Odin. And she does that, and Odin wakes up, and he's like,
now from his sleep hath Allfather risen. Now here stands Odin's power scepter in hand. Oh, my.
And Mangog is frozen. He can't move.
Now hear the words of Odin. Ages ago, my supreme wisdom, I did place thy entire race beneath an Odin spell. And now by imperial decree, I shall break that spell. Mangog, thou wert but illusion, a living prison in which thy race were jailed. But now I end the sentence.
As Mangog fades away, his race shall live again.
And Odin blasts the Mangog, and he kind of fades away. And Don Blake, with his enchanted sword, finds Loki kind of trying to sneak away. It's like, and where are you sneaking off to, Loki, now that Mangog is gone? And he's holding his blade at Loki's throat. And Loki's like, Blake, armed with a mystic sword. Curse you, even in this form, you. And he's interrupted by Odin.
Silence, evil one. The Wisdom Supreme knows thy plan to let Thordis and Blake perish by Mangog, whilst I should slumber the Odin sleep forever.
And he casts a spell on Loki, that is Odin does, and Loki is banished, powerless, to the farthest reaches of Asgard. So Odin's there with Sif and Don Blake and Thordis. He's like,
Ragnarok hath been averted. Naught remains but for Thordis to surrender to me Mjolnir.
And she's like, my hammer, but...
Nay, woman, thou misjudge me. For thy valiant deeds thou shalt know rewards royal. But ownership of Mjolnir hath ages ago been decreed by fate.
And after a minute, as in the comics, she returns to Jane Foster form. And Don Blake is really surprised by this. Because, you know, as we've been able to establish, he's as stupid as Jane Foster was in the original comics. Jane Foster, I can't believe it. Thordis was really my own nurse.
No, Donald Blake, grasp ye the magic mallet.
But a mortal can't hold, and he grabs onto the hammer, and Don Blake is changed into the mighty Thor, and as this happens, his memory has returned.
Thy mortality be mere illusion, but thou hast proven thy humility, and on this day displayed the courage and valor of an immortal true. Aye, my son, for thou hast indeed earned the right to once again be called Thor, God of Thunder.
He then kind of waves his magic scepter at Jane Foster, and he says,
As for thee, Jane Foster, thou whom I once did banished from this hallowed realm, thy valor hath shown me the error in my hasty judgment, and begging thy most gracious forgiveness, I bestow upon thee thy promised reward.
And he changes her into the goddess form, and we've seen this form before, because this is the form that Odin changed her into. Back in the Thor comic, when they changed her into a goddess, but found that she wasn't worthy because she was too cowardly. And basically, that's the form she's in now. And he says,
Though thou possesseth the power of Thor no longer, thou hast proven to be a goddess.
That's actually hard to say. Anyway.
Thus a goddess thou shalt be forevermore. So be it.
And she's wrapped in this red Kirby crackle, and she's thinking,
then if I'm a real goddess, mayhap Thor and I can still be.
And she looks over, but Thor's canoodling over here with Sif, and she's thinking to herself,
no, I suppose I lost Thor, Don, the day that Jane Foster first found the enchanted hammer. It's Sif he now loves, and what a cruel joke that is. Here I've been made an immortal, only to suffer an eternity, separated from the man I love.
And Odin comes up behind her, and now this is creepy as hell.
Grieve not, dear lady, for theirs be a love ordained by a power beyond even that of Odin.
But tell me, sire, what good is it to be an immortal if, I don't wish to offend, but I think it would be better for you to make me a plain mortal again.
And deny thyself the love of yet another, who hath lived perhaps too long without a woman at his side?
Am I understanding what you're saying to me, sire? Is Almighty Odin proposing to me?
Hast Odin ever been known to jest?
And apparently in this world, Odin is single, because that's not the case in regular Marvel Earth. And for some reason, she falls for that. I mean, yeah, she said no to Fandral and Volstagg, but... So basically, in the space of two panels, Odin has revealed his love for Jane Foster, and she agrees to marry him. Which just goes to show that the more things change, the more things stay the same. Jane Foster is just as fickle in this universe. And they talk about, in the timeless days that follow, the goddess comes to know the sincerity of Odin. I'm sure she does. And we then see a scene of Odin, and the caption says that eventually she realizes that the qualities she loved in Don Blake are also to be found in his father. So I guess they don't agree to get married in two panels, but basically three panels. And the Watcher is saying, who can say how long a courtship lasts in an eternal realm? But when the royal wedding at last takes place, even the skies of Midgard glow radiantly. as if countless uplifted blades flash in joyful tribute. And we have, you know, Jane, and she's standing here next to Odin, and Odin's wearing this big-ass headdress with big old wings on it, and you have the Grand Vizier here, and Thor, and Sif, and they're shouting out, "To the eternal happiness of Odin and his queen!" And it says kind of here at the end that, you know, that basically what happens at this point, Thor goes down to Earth to fight as the superhero on Earth, and Jane stays in Asgard to rule alongside Odin. And that is What If number 10. So what to say about this issue of What If? Well, I really like it. I have to say that this is one of the very few What If stories where everybody turns out to be happy in the end. You know, it always seems like in these What If stories, there's a big dramatic sacrifice of some sort or another. Sometimes the entire universe comes to an end. You know, there's always something tragic going on. And this is one of those few where everything kind of turns out all right and everybody's okay. Story, I was really impressed by the story because Don Glut has this knack for taking this really early Thor material, some of which is pretty weak, and weaving this in and having it make sense, at least in some ways make sense. He's going back to these stories that, you know, maybe we really haven't seen before as comics readers. Certainly I had not seen them back when I was 15 years old and this book came out. One has to remember that back in 1978, there was no Essential Thor. There was no Marvel Masterworks. We didn't have these reprintings of old material as a matter of course. There were a few titles out there that reprinted old stories, but they, for example, Marvel Tales that reprinted the old Spider-Man stories in sequence, and you had, you know, Marvel's Greatest Comics that reprinted the Fantastic Four stuff, and for a while, of course, there was like Marvel Spectacular that reprinted the Thor stuff, but by the time I was reading comics, that book was no longer being published, so really, this was my first exposure to a lot of the old stories, and I really didn't appreciate the homages in the story until I started doing this show, and I've actually been reading these old stories, some of them really for the first time. So really impressed by the writing here. The artwork is by Rick Hoberg, and I have to say it's beautiful, beautiful stuff. He's very well inked here by Dave Hunt. He manages to tell a story very well. He manages to pack a lot of plot into a page. Now, by modern standards, this book is amazingly dense. There's a lot of action going on in every page. There's a lot of dialogue going on in every page. This is how a half-hour show, which is what I envisioned to show, is now reaching almost an hour, because there's so much going on, and you kind of have to cover it, you know, to make the story make sense. And that's one of the nice things. I really look at this comic book, and I think, you know, this 60 cents, this was value for money. You know, considering that I think a regular comic at this point was 40 cents. You know, I think that this was actually a real good deal. And it has the same number of ads as a regular comic book. So overall, yeah, pretty darn impressed. Just a quick go over the ads really quick, because I'm reading from an original issue here from my collection. The very same issue that I bought off the newsstand at 7-Eleven back when I was 15 years old. And of course, we have the usual, you know, bodybuilding stuff. We have, you know, Sea Monkeys, of course, when you got karate. Park Rider series of skateboards by Nash Manufacturing. And they're like made of formica or something. They don't look anything like skateboards do today, I have to say. You like people selling stamps. A lot of real foreign money, only 10 cents. You got a lot of comic book people. You're buying comic books, selling comic books through the mail. This is interesting because this is one of the few times when I've seen Joe Kubert draw Marvel characters. This is actually an ad for Heroes World in Livingston, New Jersey. Now, of course, we know that Joe Kubert, the late Joe Kubert, lived in Dover, New Jersey, which is where his school is based. And Joe Kubert apparently did the ad artwork for this, and it's advertisement for the new 12-inch Spider-Man and Incredible Hulk Mego dolls. Full 12-inch action dolls. Fully articulated with removable clothes. Ooh la la. And we also have the superhero carry case, which is a little box that you can put your Mego dolls in. And yeah, it's kind of an interesting group here. We have two house advertisements for the Beatles story. Remember this book? Longtime Marvel fans will remember this. This was it's a precursor to graphic novels, because it was like what a Marvel Presents or something. One of these sleek coated paper
magazine-style books, and there's The Beatles Story, written by David Anthony Kraft, drawn by George Perez, and inked by Klaus Johnson, which I thought was a really bad combination. I love George Perez's art. I like Klaus Johnson's ink on certain pencilers, but the two of them, to me, just don't go together. Still, this Beatles book wasn't all that bad. We have a Hostess Twinkies ad. I'll cover the Hostess Twinkies ad just in a second because it's fun. We have a house ad for Pizzazz Magazine. Yeah, this was the magazine that actually won a No Prize from back... during the same era, really. I think it was, this house ad looks like it was made by middle school art class. This is a terrible house ad. The production values are pretty much shit. You get a coupon in here for subscriptions. Subscribe to 6 titles for the price of 5. I did that, actually. We have the Great Clark Bar Superhero Sweepstakes. Yes. You can win all sorts of things like Zing Rings and Frisbees and flashlights and super stickers and kites and all sorts of junk that you send in labels from all these different Clark Bars and all the other, like Zagnut and Slowpokes and Milk Duds and Crispy Bar. And yeah, anyway, then we go on. More candy here with the Sugar Daddy, Sugar Mama, Sugar Babies, Burger King crossover here. You can win free bikes, burgers, and candy bars. It's just a sweepstakes. You send in a coupon to enter yourself in the sweepstakes. And they said they're giving away 50,000 prizes a month. I imagine most of them were Burger King burgers. We have superhero t-shirts. Durable, fine quality, Kodal polyester and cotton t-shirts. Screen printed with superheroes such as Spider-Man, Captain America, and the Hulk. We have an ad for the Comics Buyer's Guide. This was really early on for them. We have, again, the real Switchblade comb. Yeah, you can buy a Switchblade comb here for $10. Be a veterinary assistant. Yes, that's the sort of thing that they would advertise in comics during this era. We have an ad that people buy poems. That's interesting. You submit your poems and maybe have them turned into songs. We have another Muscle Man ad. This is the Mike Marvel. You send in $3.98 and they send you a book telling you how to build your muscles to look like a superhero. And we have complete fishing outfits. Yes, 411 pieces. Nationally advertised 1978 models with a loaded tackle box. 66 deadly lures. Everything you need to go fishing at once. And you can get all three of these fishing outfits for $14.95. Yes, from Near-esque discount sales. Well, I guess that's better than the Muscle Man things. And remember all those times you felt left out because you were broke? Well, you'll never be left out again if you sell grit. Then you'll be marginalized because you're the only frickin' person in town selling grit. And on the back we have Spalding Presents Streetball with Rick Barry and Dr. J. It's actually drawn by Jack Davis. I don't know who wrote it, but Jack Davis has a very unique art style. All right, so before we go, just for shits and giggles, let's do the Hostess Fruit Pie ad. Yes, yes, these are hilarious. And I've never done one before. So this one is Spider-Man meets the Home Wrecker. And it shows Spider-Man, and, you know, these all are like little six-panel comics, so this won't take long. So Spider-Man is hanging out in a building, and the Home Wrecker is trying to knock the building down with his wrecking ball. And Spider-Man's, the Home Wrecker is on the ball again. If I don't do something fast, I'll be in no shape for that architecture class tomorrow. And the Home Wrecker is this construction-looking guy driving a wrecking ball crane. I love to see that big black ball take its toll of walls. And this time I've got Spider-Man as a bonus. And he smashes the ball into the wall. He is balls to the wall. Nasty. And Spider-Man's, another jolt like that, and this building and this little old wall crawler will both be flatter than pancakes. I've got to get Home Wrecker's hands off those controls. He'll need both hands to catch these. Apple and cherry Hostess fruit pies. Nobody's going to let them go by. And he throws these fruit pies, which apparently he had in his ass, because you don't see them in either panel before, and he's not carrying a bag or anything. And if you know anything about these Hostess fruit pies, they turn into mush really, really quickly if they get squished, because they're like full of this jelly stuff. So he throws the fruit pies to the Home Wrecker,
And the homewrecker is like, ooh, I love the light, tender crust. The real fruit filling of Hostess fruit pies. I couldn't keep my hands off them. And we see in the next panel, he's wrapped up in Spider-Man's webbing. At least I can still enjoy these delicious Hostess fruit pies. The night wasn't a total loss. And Spider-Man says, another bad guy all wrapped up. Now to get home to do my homework. You get a big delight in every bite of Hostess fruit pies. You know, I don't really know how easy it is to find these Hostess fruit pies and stuff anymore. I know that for a while we had some of these fruit pies in our vending machine at work. And after I started my new job, I actually tried one. And it was the first time in many years that I'd actually had one of these nasty things. They are so gross and sticky and super, super sweet, like sickly sweet, and really don't care for them. And they also had the cupcakes, and the cupcakes, they're not quite so bad, but I really wouldn't call them good either. Anyway, I mean, this Hostess things, I know that the company's having financial trouble, so maybe we will see the end of them at some point in the near future, and probably a good thing too. All right, so let's wrap up the show for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Once again, you can email the show. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, or you can join us on Facebook, just like these three did earlier in the show. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.